Brad Sesmat Show, broadcasting live from the Skyview Network Studios.
Great Monday. Thanks for being with us. It's good to be back. Thanks to Espo and Jeff Munn. I had a terrific week. As you guys get older, I'm not old. It's just I have a bunch of kids running around. I've got four of them. When you have the kids and they roll through and you get a chance to see them, it just makes everything more pleasant. Yeah, I paid attention to Tiger Woods. Who wouldn't have paid attention to Tiger Woods last night? The death of Frank DeFord was a bummer. I like Frank DeFord a lot, and he passes away, and he barely had retired from NPR. So yesterday, I finally got caught up on everything. I saw the Tiger dash cam stuff yesterday, and that made, on one hand, I was very sad. On the other hand, I was like, man, you are jacked up. It was funny. It was sad. So it was a great week, just a great week. We didn't go anywhere, just hung out, went to the Princess. We did go somewhere, went to the Princess for a couple of days for a summer staycation, but it was good to get away. We have Paula Bovin with us today, News and Notes. The professor checks in for her weekly segment, and there's plenty to get to with Paula even here in June. So we'll have Paula Bovin with us. And a few other things that we are working on. We were going to have Luis Gonzalez with us today. We're chasing Luis, not just because of the car rescue. Like, I got a text. This is how it works in our industry. It's Saturday afternoon. I'm in a swimsuit. I'm hanging out. I got a little umbrella going. And I get a text from somebody in local television who says, do you have Luis Gonzalez's phone number that you can share with us? He pulled a lady out of a burning car. And I'm sitting there. I'm looking at this text, and it's like 95, 98 degrees. I'm by my pool. Life doesn't suck. I have my family with me. And I'm like, oh my gosh, what a disaster. You got to go chase this. You got to go try to find Luis to talk about a burning car. And that is your deal today. Whew. But I want to have Luis on. His son, Jacob, is going to be drafted next week. And they're actually out in San Francisco today. They're actually out on the coast doing some things. And that's more important than chatting with us. We'll get to Luis at some point in time. Well, Byron Scott on tomorrow's show. Looking forward to that. Mike Farron's going to be with us on the media podcast later this week. Mike Farron does a really good job with the Diamondbacks. If you've not heard Mike do play-by-play, he is into it. He is a seam head. He has a terrific show over on Sirius XM. He knows his baseball. He's passionate about it. He lives it. He breathes it. He just doesn't roll in. I really admire the job that he does. So we're going to have Mike on the media podcast. He'll also be on the show here on Thursday. Up on the website, we had a great May. Man, we had the best May by a long ways. A great, great May. So thanks for supporting us. And those of you that sponsor us, we appreciate you doing that. And those that are considering sponsoring us, that's great too. Thanks for just checking us out. With all that said, I think this week is going to be a Lonzo Ball week. I think this week is going to be a Diamondbacks week because they didn't play all that well over the weekend down in Florida. They got no hit, and it was just not a good weekend. The NBA playoffs so far, a couple of my friends this morning said, boring, not interesting, not exciting, blowout city. And I'm not going to be the guy that reminds them that, yeah, Golden State last year, the same thing happened. They won the first two games because, I don't know, Harrison Barnes was on the court last year for Golden State, not Kevin Durant. And Harrison Barnes went on to Dallas, and they blew this year. Harrison Barnes versus Kevin Durant, I think I'll make that trade 100 times over. But when I watch the game, and I see things through a lens of are my friends that are not sports fans, is my wife, who's a sports fan, quite a bit of a sports fan, but she's not big on the NBA. My daughters, when they're in town on vacation, are they plopping down and saying, we have to watch the game? And the answer is yes. So I don't know what the numbers are going to look like today. Eric, have you seen the numbers?
I have not. No, I have not.
Did you watch?
Oh, yeah. I've watched both games, start to finish.
Bored?
No.
Not even the last 2 minutes last night?
I mean, how
night?
Can you be bored watching the Golden State Warriors play basketball? Even in dominating as they have been, they are so – they do everything you're technically not supposed to do in basketball, but they do it so well. You're not supposed to pull up for three-pointers on a three-on-one fast break, but they do that.
But they do it,
you're
and they
not
make suppo- them.
They're
and
not,
they make
yeah,
them.
They're, you're not supposed to shoot one-footed, falling-away corner three-pointers, but guess what? Steph Curry does, and guess what? Steph Curry makes them.
Kevin Durant, inside, gets hit, throws it up to the basket.
Yeah.
So my wife last night was very upset about the continuation ruling.
Oh, I'm not.
And they went to Steve Javi about it.
I call that savvy basketball.
I call that savvy basketball, too. But the acting that is going on, the decapitation. What was the play where Pachulia set a pick on the high post and Kyrie ran into the pick and it looked like somebody had taken a road grader and just pushed him.
Yeah, they had,
he had to go flopping all the way back.
Well, and there were like four Cavaliers that had to try to pick up Kyrie after that. Illegal or hard screen or whatever. But I think, Brad, in game three, you're going to see LeBron just like, I'm going to try to have to just win this by myself. Like, I can't have a triple-double. I just need to score 50. And if I have five less assists, whatever we can do to get back in the series, because they're so, it really, these are the two best teams, but the Warriors are just so good that this is not going to be a long series.
The guy that I'll disagree with you. It won't be a long series. I think it'll go five. How's that?
Yeah, huh?
That's going out on a limb, right?
Yeah.
The guy that's got it good here is Kyrie. Because when the Cavaliers don't win, LeBron just gets hammered, right? And Kevin Love gets hammered. I didn't think Kyrie played all that great last night. I didn't think he had a terrific game. I didn't see anything special out of Kyrie Irving last night. I'm not bagging it. Oh, you're hating on Kyrie. No, I'm not. He didn't play all that great. He had 19, and it was a pretty pedestrian 19. There were open looks that they had last night. There was a grit, I thought, in Cleveland where they started. Like, Richard Jefferson started going after guys last night. If you watched as the game progressed, there were bows and bodies flying on the Warriors' side because the Cavaliers said, we are going to get into you. Now, it didn't work. You know, they got into Steph Curry in the first quarter. Jeff Van Gundy was right in pointing this out, that Steph Curry had 10 free throws in the very first quarter. So what was Cleveland's approach? We're going to body him up. We're going to get into him. That's not going to work. That's not going to work. And on one side of the street, when you have a player like Kyrie Irving, I think getting a free pass on all this stuff. On the other side of the street, you have people that are hammering Klay Thompson just because they're looking at his points scored line, right? Now, last night, Klay Thompson had 22 points. Klay Thompson was a plus 24 for the game last night, which was the highest among any of the Warrior players. What does that mean? It means on the other end of the court, where I care so much more about what goes on defensively than who scores the most points. It's easy, and in our business, we point out who scores the most points. But we never take the time to break down that, did you see the closeout that Klay Thompson had over and over and over, and his ability to switch off the pick and roll over and over and over? No, it's just Klay Thompson only made 7 of 16 shots. That doesn't equate to me. I look for the complete basketball player. Like last night, Kevin Durant made LeBron James look silly on defense. The backdoor cut of the Steph Curry no look that has been shown over and over and over, where all Durant did is jab step to the baseline and then cut to the basket, and LeBron is still going the other way. You know, that this whole thing about, well, Kevin is now taking the mantle as the best player in the NBA, that really is clickbait. That really is, we got to have a hot take. That really is dumb. It's one game. And so far in the series, nothing has happened that wasn't supposed to happen. When it comes to the playoffs and the finals, when a team wins on the other team's court, that's breaking news. When a team wins at home, that's not breaking news. That's what they are supposed to do. So really nothing has happened in this series other than Golden State crushed Cleveland at home. I'm not shocked or surprised or like, wow, this series is over. No, there's a long ways to go. Does Golden State have the superior team? Absolutely, by a long, long, long ways. But all it takes is a Draymond Green technical last year to get thrown out, right? A flagrant last year, I should say. And Draymond Green is sitting on the bench, and all of a sudden a series that was supposed to go to Golden State does not. That's how close a margin it is here. I think that's why Cleveland is trying to bait, in certain instances, players into responding. Get them off the floor. They got Draymond off the floor last night. He had five fouls. Then he was losing his mind. But when he was on the floor, there was nobody that could stay with him.
Sometimes, Brad, these stat lines can be misleading.
Sure.
But Durant's wasn't last night. 13-22 from the field, 4 of 8 on threes, made all 3 of his free throws, had 13 rebounds, 6 assists, 5 blocks, and he was a plus 21, finished with 33 points. I mean, everyone knows the Durant, the shooter, but you're seeing he can affect the game in so many different ways on help defense. When Kyrie got in the lane a couple times, he backed off of his guy and blocked a shot, which led to a transition. Easy points. You're right. This is this is going to be a long series, five games.
But the one play where it was Tristan Thompson that tried to turn on him, backed him down in the baseline, and then up fake that went into the lane, and Kevin blocked it right back in his face. And then he grabbed the ball, and then he dribbled up court, and then he made the pass.
It's just not fair. You know? Oh, yeah, and he's 7 feet tall. Like, it's just not fair.
He's 7 feet tall, and you're watching him, and I've never seen people talk about Dirk's game back in the day, but Dirk was just a guy when he was really Dirk. Now he's older and he's still fun to watch. Dirk would get the ball and he'd have so many low post moves, and then he could step out and hit a three-pointer. Nothing wrong with that. There's no way Dirk, even in his prime, could blow past LeBron James.
Nope.
None. And so this is not a hammer LeBron thing. And this isn't even loving Kevin Durant at the end. I think last night he moved the needle towards being the most dominant player in the NBA, but you can't take that mantle away from LeBron James unless you're just a hater. You know, you just can't. And Durant made LeBron look silly on the defensive end of the floor. The facts are LeBron is having to expend so much energy. I remember last year he looked just beat tired at the end. And they've gone through this whole, I'm going to rest during the regular season. This is why he shouldn't be playing games and back-to-backs and why he shouldn't be playing in Atlanta on a Monday night in January, right? This is why the season is so long. Now, people will say, well, these guys get paid gobs of money. They should be out there performing every night. No, this is what we want to see in the postseason. So if you're going to take some tread off the tire, don't take tread off the tire November through April. This is not bad for basketball either, because if you watch the style of play, that they're putting out on the floor, the Warriors are playing pretty darn good defense, I think. Cleveland's defense is horrid. You can't give up 40 points in a quarter. You can't give up 130 in a game. Off every timeout, off every TV timeout, Golden State ran a set play when they had the ball, and they'd either get a dunk or a wide-open shot. That's Steve Kerr, and that's Mike Brown drawing up great plays and putting their players in positions to win. I'm into this. This is fun. All right, on the other side, so some things happened on the air here while I was gone, including a stop in by Jerry Colangelo, and he dropped some knowledge about GCU. I'm going to get into that a little bit. Lonzo Ball is back in the news cycle. The Diamondbacks, and it's a big week for U of A. That's all straight ahead. All right, Paula Bova News and Notes here coming up shortly. Tomorrow, Byron Scott among many on the show. Busy week ahead. Thanks for being with us. Sports360AZ.com. We partner with the Arizona Republic, AZ Central Sports. And we have our television show on Fox Sports Arizona tomorrow night with 16 airings this week. Okay, so let's get over. I want to hustle through some things on the baseball end. It's not that I don't care what's going on with the Diamondbacks. It's just a dang long season. They weren't good over the weekend in Miami. It's the Marlins, and actually I think the schedule may have had something to do with it. So the Diamondbacks get down to Florida. It's the end of a long road trip. These are baseball boys, right? They have a Saturday day game in Miami. Saturday day game in Miami, that's not good. That means Saturday night in South Beach is wide open for baseball boys. And on Saturday, they end up not finding any way, shape, or form against Edison Volquez, who last time I checked was 1-7 coming into the game. And there it is. He ends up no-hitting the Diamondbacks. That wasn't good. That's courtesy of our friends over at Fox Sports Arizona. So that wasn't good. And then yesterday, they weren't good as well. They ended up losing 6-5. So a road trip that started out very promising. They go 5-6. It's not the end of the world. They're still hovering right near the top of the National League West. They have the Padres, who aren't good, but they're trying to get better coming in, and then Milwaukee on this homestand, then they head out. So I don't have much on the Diamondbacks other than you just got to hang in there. Robbie Ray tomorrow night throws. Robbie Ray's not allowed to run in the last 24 innings. But not a good weekend, I don't believe. And at some point, I don't think, maybe it is this week, I don't know. At some point, Jake Lamb and Paul Goldschmidt need to get a bit of a push from the All-Star fans here in the Valley. I really believe if you look at both those players, and you can go around and you can list guys at third base and first base that may be far more deserving in terms of numbers. But every year teams are like, vote for our guy. He's an All-Star and he's hitting 220. And that's not happening. No, that's not what the All-Star game is about. These fan deals where they get people involved to vote for all your favorite players and they're hitting below the Mendoza line, that's not good. I think those two players, though, deserve some recognition because they have had a very good season to this point.
And isn't it great to have a relevant baseball team on the field in June? It's such a nice feeling. Like, because usually this is the time of the year where we are starting to talk about, well, the Diamondbacks are pretty much out of it, but let's see who's going to be their All-Star representative. This year, it's wild. The Diamondbacks came off a so-so road trip, and they're still right in the thick of things in early June.
And I watched every one of those games. It may not have been the whole game, but I watched every one of those games when I was off last week. Like, it was just part of my day. I felt like it was incomplete.
I made time Saturday to watch because I saw on Twitter that Volquez was dealing, and it got to be like the 6th, 7th inning, and I popped on the TV and watched the end of it.
I was such a dope Saturday. I decided to get in my 15-mile bike ride at like 11 a.m.
Yeah, that's not smart.
So, and then yesterday I decided to get it in at like noon.
That's about as not smart as going out to ASU 7-on-7 passing camp at 4 o'clock in the afternoon today once you be 109.
Is that what you're doing today?
Who would do that?
Are you doing that today?
Well, I'm wearing the golf shirt. I don't know
if
you can see
it. It's black.
But yeah, it's black. Yeah, another smart move.
But you're trying to drop weight.
Yeah, I hope I sweat it all.
I wasn't trying to drop weight, but I know I dropped. I felt like somebody just hit me over the head. I was laying there watching Volquez, and I'm thinking, I must be delirious. This is Edison bleeping Volquez throwing a no-hitter against the Diamondbacks, and he's 1-7 with an ERA north of 5.
In that weird-looking Marlins Park, or whatever they call
dumpy.
It. It's just odd.
It looks dumpy, doesn't it?
Just the lighting's weird, and they have all that stuff out in the outfield. It's just odd.
So they have the Padres coming in for 3 games. Jerry Colangelo dropped in while I was gone. And Jerry, with Greg Esposito last week, did Espo do a good job? You guys can send me a note. I mean, we don't have to bring him back. Was Espo any good, Eric?
I tried not to bother you on vacation. Yes, Espo was fine.
He was fine?
Yeah. I mean, the show was well produced.
All Espo has
to do is get in there and just talk. That's all he has to do.
Was Greg had told me at one point in time that Jerry was like on his bucket list of interviews. And I can get that. I understand that. Greg is a lifelong Suns fan.
And, of course, I clowned on Espo a couple times because he called him Mr. Colangelo.
Did he?
Yeah.
Come on.
Yeah.
Serious?
He didn't realize it. He didn't realize it until after he listened back.
Mr. Colangelo. Jerry didn't correct him, huh?
No. There's no need to. It's a sign of respect.
That's a sign
of respect.
I'm
sure Jerry's fine with that.
I got that.
And Jerry did drop a little knowledge about what's going on with things here in the market.
So, basically, I've been on this rant about how they got to get out of the WAC because the WAC is
they being GCU. Yes.
Yeah, the WAC is a bunch of misfits. That is, it is. It's just a bunch of misfit schools. Like you have Rio Grande Valley, and they have Chicago State and Utah Valley State and Cal State Bakersfield. It's all fine, all academic institutions. It's fine, but if you're going to be a major player, you cannot have them on your schedule every week. In the West Coast Conference, people are like, well, the West Coast Conference. No, the presidents of the West Coast Conference do not want any part of a university that is going to charge students like half of what it would cost to go to those big universities within the West Coast Conference. Go look it up. How much does it cost to go to Santa Clara or St. Mary's versus going to Grand Canyon University? It's a big difference.
You would know.
Yes, I would.
You have a GCU alum in the family.
I do have a GCU alum in the family. Now, the Horizon League, I've been all over that. And I've had some people on these little leagues have sent me notes on Twitter. Well, you know, who's telling you this? It's me looking at the space. It's me connecting dots. this whole idea that you have to have a conference where everybody is within the same geographical zone, those are usually people that are in their 40s and beyond that are just used to it being as is. No, those days are changing. Those days are definitely changing. The SEC is not Southeastern anymore, right? Last time I checked, Missouri is not Southeastern. The Big 12, last time I checked, West Virginia, not middle of the country. Last time I checked. So
Maryland and Rutgers, not in the middle
Maryland
of the country.
Maryland country, Big 10, right. No, that's, and so Jerry was talking about having a conference that could be formed, right? And when I saw the bits of it.
I will quote him. I have the story up on sports360az.com right now. I would foresee over the next 4 or 5 years a lot of schools making changes, Colangelo explained. Maybe a new conference developing.
Okay, so.
And you and I have known Jerry long enough.
That means there's going to be a conference.
That means there are.
It's already happening.
That means people have been talking and plans have been structured, at least skeleton structured.
Well, it's kind of funny too when you see who's liking things on Twitter, like people with Grand Canyon University basketball, people associated with the university. You're not getting any blowback on this, so we both know what's going on. So let's just say it's the Horizon League. The Horizon League, well, what about all these baseball teams and other sports that are in the dead of winter in Milwaukee? Fly them out here for 2 weeks, play a whole bunch of games at spring training sites. Really not that hard. End of statement. You'll have a lot of your alums that will want to come out here and get away from the bitter cold in February and March. Okay, that's easy. Or April, after spring training is done. Basketball, what's the difference? You're flying into Chicago. You're already going to Chicago to play Chicago State. You're already going into Missouri to play UKMC. I don't know the financial health of Chicago State or UKMC or Utah Valley State, but I have to imagine it's not good. What about TV and all that stuff? Maybe you start your basketball games earlier. Maybe you start at 6 o'clock rather than 7. Oh, well, traffic. Sorry to tell you this. It matters to the national audience. It matters to the national networks. Knowing that Gonzaga has had and been playing footsie with the Big East, that is a lot of travel. Maybe Jerry has a connection to Mark Few. And maybe Gonzaga is the linchpin with GCU that they go together, and maybe they say we can come out here on the West Coast and be travel partners together. That's not a maybe in my book. I think there's a lot there on that front. So, and this is all good news. All of this is good news because Arizona State is sitting there in the Pac-12, and they're like, we're in the Pac-12. We're in this great conference. And the DirecTV thing hasn't worked out. Larry Scott can say all day long he's getting a bunch of dough being rolled into him, and he is. But it's not good for Arizona or Arizona State to be traveling to Pullman, Washington to be playing sporting events. It's a closer flight to go to Oklahoma City. It's a closer flight to go to BYU. Last time I checked, BYU is in this conference too on the basketball end. You don't have to have football. And football is going to be one of those sports that is going to start to be dropped like flies around the college sports scene. How does New Mexico State even field a football team at this point? And I'm serious about that. If you go look at these conferences that are trying to compete with 90 and 100 players, students, with gear and insurance and the concussion thing, you're going to see football programs start to be lopped off. It's too damn expensive. So I think this is very good news that Jerry would drop this. I like that a great deal. One last thing. Greg Byrne is making his impact with U of A. Greg Byrne has got a home-and-home with Alabama in basketball with U of A. Now, we had Greg on the show a couple weeks back and asked him about football. And he was pretty direct about that. I should have followed through and said, do you think we could see basketball? So Alabama and U of A are going to play each other this coming year in basketball.
And you know who Alabama's head basketball coach is, don't you? It's Avery Johnson, remember?
That's right.
Yeah.
I was going to say Mark Gottfried, and he's been gone a long time.
Yeah, it was, but it's Avery Johnson.
Avery Johnson. Yep. Avery's got a great – I love Avery's twang. That's great. All right. Paula's next. News and notes with Paula Bovin. I didn't even get to Lonzo Ball. I'll get to that with Paula next. Now, the professor Paula Bovin joins us from Arizona State University, where she is involved on a daily basis with Cronkite. What is your exact title? I should have that in front of me. I forget. What is
it
your title?
It would be called Professor of Practice.
You're Professor of Practice. I'm an adjunct professor, so we are professors joined by the hip. I hear you guys are expanding down there.
Well, I mean, we are constantly... It's just growing like crazy here because so many students are interested in coming, not to be the PR agent here. But
wow, listen to you.
Frankly, the program is so good. We're trying to keep up with all the interest. So, Indeed, yes. In fact, go ahead.
I heard you hired Vanessa Ruiz from Channel 12, that she's leaving Channel 12.
Yeah, that was the Borderlands position. It was, I think, a position we've had before, but she's going to be a great addition. I know they're really excited to have her here. So, yeah, Vanessa Ruiz from Channel 12.
Wow, listen to you. What is your what is your goal down there long term, since we're talking? What do you want to do?
You know, as you know better than anyone, Brad, it's such a strange time in journalism. So one is just prepare students for what the future holds. You know, it's kind of a changing thing, but at the very bottom, the roots still being good quality reporting and journalism. And so it's kind of a two-handed approach right now. And then on sports, you know, it's so interesting to me because I keep hearing people sort of fearful about the future of journalism. No, it's going to look different, and it's not going to be the journalism we knew. You know, everybody's not picking up their paper off the driveway every morning.
Nobody is.
But it's not going away. It's just going to be available in different forms. And, I mean, right now, you know, not to get on a high horse here, but this sort of fake news, this climate we're living in where the profession is getting beaten down.
Yeah.
I think it's up to these students to show people how wrong that is. So that's where we are.
Frank DeFord passed away last week while I was on vacation. So I'm curious, did Frank DeFord have an impact on you?
Absolutely. I mean, you know, I grew up loving sport for two reasons. One was because my dad was a huge White Sox fan, and that's how we kind of bonded growing up, was these moments of going to those games together. The other was reading Sports Illustrated, and reading that kind of sort of long-form journalism when I didn't want to put the article down after eight paragraphs, you know, in great storytelling. I think sometimes the storytelling is a lost art in journalism, and Frank DeFord did that so well. And, you know, my good friend Karen Krause, who lives here in the Valley, covers golf for the New York Times. She was telling me a story of how when she was young she wrote to Frank DeFord and asked him to, like, edit a couple of her early pieces. And he wrote back, like, a 9-page letter to her.
Wow.
You know, critiquing with advice. And, you know, so she said she was kind of a nobody. Kind of shows the kind of guy he was, too.
I was listening to a podcast over the weekend where Sally Jenkins was on it talking about Frank DeFord. And some of the stories, of course, Dan Jenkins is her dad. And Dan, mm-hmm. and Dan is a terrific, terrific golf writer. But that she'd never met him, but it was one of those deals that you knew that if Frank DeFord walked in to cover an event, that it was a really big deal, and that he was very unassuming in that way. Because I've seen people that are like that I'm here, so okay, let's get started. And that evidently he was not like that. I only interviewed him once, but I grew up reading him and very much agree with you that the art of long form is lost. Rather than saying, okay, you got to do 200 words because people don't have the attention span for more than that, I don't agree with that.
I am with you. And, in fact, I just read a study last month, Brad, where they found, in fact, that good writing, long-form good journalism, and particularly in sports, did not make people, you know, leave after a couple paragraphs. And, in fact, people would stick with the story. So I think sometimes the decision makers are thinking there's no room for long form journalism, but I think the public is smarter than that, and I think they appreciate a good story. And there's so many, you know, in our world of sports, there's so many to be told, so many stories, whether it's adversity and all of these great things that happen beyond the numbers on the playing field, that I think it's still a very, very important part of journalism.
I'll tell you, and we're talking with Paula Bovin, the professor, what I found watching the finals last night, the really good story to tell, if I'm up there, my story is not how great Kevin Durant is. My story is, what has Steve Kerr gone through with his spinal fluid? And to see him barely moving around now, and is this the end for Steve Kerr? I don't know that it is or isn't. And what is the long-term implication health-wise for him? But in a finals where the first two games haven't been competitive, to me, Kerr is the overriding most interesting story. This whole idea of having a hot take on Curry-Durant being the best tandem, or is Durant past LeBron, put me to sleep with that stuff.
I got to be honest with you. I'm starting to feel that a little bit, too. And, I did marvel at some of the things LeBron was doing. And so the guy wills himself sometimes to succeed. And then obviously Steph Curry and that whole group. But you're right. I mean, it's some of the stories on the sidelines that are intriguing. And, Kerr's been an incredible story of who he was in college at Arizona, to what his family went through with his father, too.
Yep.
I mean, his time here with the Suns and what he has become. There are a few guys I think as well-liked and as respected in the position he's in than Kerr. I mean, it's been a phenomenal fit. It's sort of a scary storyline about how much he's suffering and how much pain he's in. So, it's an interesting topic.
I think if someone, Paula, were to do a deep dive on the missteps in Phoenix sports, I'm not just banging on the Suns here because I do that enough, but if we're talking about missteps in Phoenix sports, probably things like building a hockey facility in Glendale and letting Steve Kerr get out of town would have to be near the top of the list. I'm sure there's others without really thinking about it much, but... signing Emmett Smith to a contract with the Cardinals and stuff that you're just like, why did you guys do that in hindsight? How did Kerr get out of here?
I think every community could write that, but boy, ours sure seem more profound than most. Every time I watch guys like Isaiah Thomas play his great Max Scherzer, people forget he was on the Diamondbacks when he was very young.
No, that's good.
How do those things happen? I don't know. It's pretty frustrating.
Yeah, you and I are noodling a column right here.
Exactly.
We got 8,000 words, not 800.
Right.
So Lonzo Ball, let's get into this. Lonzo Ball is supposed to work out for the Lakers on Wednesday, and now there's this Huffington Post had a big story about if the dad has become a concern for the Lakers. If Lonzo Ball is passed by the Lakers and he's sitting there for the Suns, that to me seems like there's no way you can move off that. Danny Ainge is going to do something at the top of the draft because he's Danny Ainge. He's a wily dude.
Right.
Lonzo's been talked about to the nth degree and the dad has been talked about, but I'm actually interested to see here in the next couple of weeks how this does play out. It's more than just... is he going to go to the Lakers and that's it and the dad's nuts? If it's the dad can't keep his mouth shut and the Lakers pass on him, then, what do the Suns do?
Oh, my gosh. If I'm the Suns and he's available, I take him in a heartbeat. I don't buy that they can't live with his dad business. My gut feeling on this whole Lakers thing, I feel like they're kind of posturing, pre-draft, trying to send out word that they're not interested in him, or trying to just kind of mess up the order a little bit, confuse people. I don't know how much I buy that they really think the dad is going to be that big a problem. NBA teams, they're smart. They've got people in place to help deflect these issues. And unless there's something else about Alonzo Ball, I do not buy the fact that they're concerned about his dad. That's just me.
All right. Well, while I was gone, Jerry Colangelo came on the show and hinted in a very strong fashion that there could be a league within the next few years that GCU could be a part of. I've already said they've got to get out of the WAC and that the Horizon League just lost Valparaiso, and the Horizon League should be the place for them to go. I'm seeing nothing on Twitter to debunk that. I've had no phone calls from GCU to debunk that. I'm seeing people associated with basketball doing thumbs up and retweets. For Jerry to drop a hint like that, you know him as well as I do. That means there's already something happening. Do you see or have you heard anything about GCU? I envision them being with Gonzaga, and Gonzaga bolts out of the West Coast Conference. Do you see or know anything on this front?
No, I saw your story, and I also noticed that there wasn't much, like, you know, there wasn't backlash about it. So that would make sense. I mean, it would, you know. I think they're the storyline that people need to start following here in the next year or two. Just think about it. There's a university that it's going to be, what, I think 20,000 strong in enrollment pretty soon, if it's not there already. Here at the heart of Phoenix, and with a basketball program that's only going to continue to rise. I mean, there, you know, it's hard when you don't have football to sort of get the national attention as far as an athletic department program.
Sure.
But I think they're a really important storyline. And, you know, even the debate about the for-profit institutions, and we know how that's been an issue for ASU.
Yep.
I mean, even that storyline is going to kind of resurface, I think, as they continue to succeed. And I know they've tried to get out of that for-profit status and have not had luck doing it. So I don't know. I think they're just a big storyline right now.
I would like to see Paula Bovin moderate Brian Mueller on one side and Michael Crow on the other. That's what I would like to see.
That would be fun.
In a boxing ring. That would be fun.
That would be interesting.
Stay well. Thanks.
Okay, Brad.
Good catching up with you. There's Paula Bovin, News and Notes. The professor moving on from AZ Central. It's been over a month now. Good for her. She sounds great. And it's plugged in. On the other side, so the NFL is trying desperately any way, shape, and form to get people to watch Monday Night Football. And their latest is just like, come on, you got to do better than this. All that and some other notes, that's next. All right, so the big news of the NFL today is they're bringing back Monday Night Football with Hank Williams. They're bringing back the intro to Monday Night Football with Hank Williams. All right, you can get out of it. So this is supposed to get people to watch. Here's the problem. This airs at 6 or 7, and it's done at 6:01 or 7:01. So is this going to get me to watch? Eric, is this going to get you to watch? Like, boy, we have to see Hank Williams belt out all my rowdy friends.
No. You know what gets me to watch? Good football. And usually these Monday night games are not usually good football.
Okay, so the opening game is Saints at Vikings. Now, if you notice, there's been a whole lot of Adrian Peterson push by the NFL.
Yep.
Been a whole lot of NFL stories around Adrian Peterson trying to build up interest in Saints at Vikings. Outside of Adrian Peterson, do I really care? The answer is no. If you're a Vikings fan, you care. If you're a Saints fan, you care. Nationally, eh.
And if you followed Adrian Peterson's recent history,
nothing there.
There's nothing there.
Okay. Chargers at Broncos. I don't care.
2008?
Yeah.
Sure. 2007? 6? 9?
If you're a Broncos fan, you're going to watch. If you're a Chargers fan, you're going to. Here's the thing, guys. If your team is playing, you're going to watch. But am I just like, oh my gosh, I have to get home to watch 6 straight hours of Saints Vikings and Chargers Broncos when I can just look at it on Twitter? No. The following week, Lions and Giants, don't care. Week after that, Cowboys at Cardinals, I'll be at the game. Week after that, Redskins at Chiefs. Chiefs just got rid of Jeremy Maclin, their best receiver, which easily says to me, we are getting Patrick Mahomes ready with cap space to go get people around him for 2018. Vikings at Bears, don't care. Bears aren't any good. Vikings, eh. Colts at Titans, it's the Titans. Yeah, they're fine. Not interested.
The people that will be interested in all these games, though, are fantasy football players.
Sure.
So.
Sure, but even that, you and I saw this last year, there was a bit of a softening on that.
And it's
a bit.
And it's easy enough to follow now that you don't have to watch the game to know what's going on with your fantasy team.
Redskins at Eagles, Broncos at Chiefs. If you're a big football fan, by the time you get through Friday night high school, Saturday college, Sunday a 10 a.m., a 1 p.m., and a 7 p.m., you're going to, and if there's a Thursday night game, which there will be to get your weekend started, somewhere along the way, the missus is going to hammer you, one. Two, you have to have a life. So when it's like, let's make sure that we bring Hank Williams back, and that is going to get people excited to watch Sean McDonough and John Gruden, it's not happening. It's just not. This isn't that hard. Dolphins at Panthers, Monday, November 15th, don't care. Falcons at Seahawks, Texans at Ravens.
Falcons and Seahawks would be an interesting game.
Interesting, but three and a half hours.
Yeah.
Remember, three and a half hours.
Have it on, but don't have it on, if you know what I'm saying.
When I get into the holidays, like I don't see the Raiders until Raiders at Eagles on Christmas night. I'll watch that. It's Christmas night. Packages are open. It's fine. But, you know, the Monday night schedule of the games that are out there, it's not that great. So they're trying everything possible. They got a new helmet they're rolling out here in the off season. Whatever we can do to try. They're now taking alcohol, hard liquor sponsorships. The NFL announced last week they're taking hard liquor sponsorships. Of course they are. You've got to have money coming in from somewhere, anywhere, because it's starting to shift.
And it's early June, Brad, so this is a perfect time to release all these little details about what's going to be happening with Monday Night Football.
Keep us in the news. And yeah, I talk about it, but I just kind of laugh like, really? All right. We're done. We've had enough today. I feel good. I'm back from vacation. It's been fun being with you. Justin Toscano helped Eric today. Justin is going to be somebody you need to remember. He is terrific. And when he's done here, he'll go on to real places beyond us. Not that we're not a real place, just he's gonna throw. Unless you want to stay here, I could offer you a job. You do? You want to stay? You can do Eric's. Jared Nielsen's our chairman of the board. Thanks for being with us. We'll see you tomorrow.